Hello and welcome to the Business of Sustainability podcast, the latest show in partnership with City AM, which will be discussing the latest trends, challenges and advancements in the sustainability and ESG landscape. My name is Alex Smith and I'll be co-hosting this podcast alongside Mike Penrose. You may already know us both as the co-founders of Future Plus, the sustainability and ESG management and reporting platform that can help any size and type of business improve its sustainability. This podcast series is for anyone looking for valuable insights on sustainability in business. We'll be hearing from a range of experts in the ESG and sustainability sectors, including investors, innovators, and regulators. We'll look to provide you with expert analysis and opinions on the future of sustainability in business, including some of the challenges facing all of us.
It's my real pleasure to introduce our two expert guests for today. The first, Damien Stork, who's the founder of CHX Performance, along with his colleague Jonathan Hook, who's their Director of Learning. Damien, Jonathan, thank you for joining us. Could I ask you first just to introduce yourself, give us a little bit of background to you, how you got into this business, but also on what CHX Performance does?
Hi, I'm Damien Stork, one of two founders of CHX, and thank you for inviting us. It's a huge pleasure. And my other founder, Chris Beedy, who's a Professor of Cognition and Neuroscience. And we met and have been working together on and off for around 25 years when I set up my first business in talent consulting, which I've been doing since, and he was completing his first PhD. So the point of CHX is to get into the heart of business with some really good rigorous science.
Hi, I'm Jonathan. Again, thanks for inviting us. I've been with CHX for nearly 5 years. Prior to that, I helped run a very large UK retailer for a number of years. And then I left the corporate world and retrained as a primary school teacher. And I became a head and I helped turn around underperforming schools in deprived areas. And for me, what I love about CHX is what we do is we bring in high quality content, as Damien said, you know, from the research of Professor Chris Beedy, but apply it in a very practical way. So, and being an educator, educating people is deeply rewarding.
In today's episode, we'll be drawing upon Damien and Jonathan's knowledge and expertise to explore people's sustainability and what that means for individuals, businesses, and organisations. Mike, I'll let you kick things off with today's first question.
First one is to you, Jonathan. I've heard you talk a lot and I hear you use the phrase biology of business quite a bit. Could you explain to us what is the biology of business, but also most importantly, given the topic of the podcast, how that relates to the sustainability of businesses?
Thank you. So we came up with the phrase biology of business because the world of leadership development, organizational development is dominated by psychology. Thought has absolute ascendancy in everything that we understand in business. We're actually... Biology underpins a great deal of how we think, how we behave, and indeed, it is how we feel is biological. And almost everything that happens inside a business stems from our feelings, how we feel, our biology. So we have huge rafts and rafts of business psychologists and almost nobody out there saying I'm a business biologist. So I think understanding our behavior from a biological perspective is critically important. And from a sustainability perspective, there are a couple of core areas that sort of leap out to me. The first one is just in the retention of your brilliant people who between them account for the knowledge, the experience and the cultural experience of your business. And they leave typically because they don't feel like they fit anymore. We see in all our organizations a classic linear thing where people disengage because they don't feel good. They withdraw and ultimately they either depart or they burn out, neither of which are characteristics of a sustainable organization, let alone one I'd want to work in. So you have that kind of a retention piece, but also the realization of the benefits of an organization. All the things that every organization would love to be associated with their values, things like engagement, collaboration, honesty, vulnerability, all of these buzzwords or core words in any business, they're all feelings, they're all felt. So understanding where those, what drives those from our evolutionary inheritance, our core needs, and that and how that in turn drives how we feel is critical in realizing the benefits that from people that organizations are trying to do all the time.
Just elaborating on that a little bit on this first question. You used a phrase there, you know, our evolutionary inheritance. You talk a lot about, and I've heard you talk a lot about feelings and how they relate to the workforce. What are the predominant feelings and emotions that people need to pay attention to in the workforce? And how is that linked to our evolution?
When we talk about feelings, we are talking about mood and emotion. They are our two feelings, and they are different. Mood is a biological signal that is telling us how we are doing internally, how we are doing with our physical survival. And we would focus on six core components of mood. We would focus on tension, depression, anger, vigor, fatigue and confusion. They are the feelings that mood would certainly determine. And then we have emotions. Again, emotions are biological signals. They change our biology, but they are triggered by events external to our body, typically a someone, or it can be a something. And again, we focus on those feelings around our core human needs. We have certainty, inclusion, autonomy, attachment, and which is a bit like feeling valued or status. And we have equity, that sense of being equally treated.
We came across a McKinsey report in 2001 that showed that one of the biggest losses of productivity is a result of anxiety and depression, two of the things you've sort of been alluding to there. Yeah. And they're two of the most talked about mental health disorders that exist at the moment. You hear in the news a bit about the crisis of anxiety, that depression is becoming one of the biggest sicknesses on the planet today. And they reckon that it costs the global economy about $1 trillion every single year. And to put that into context, that's $1 trillion. That's about a third of the economy of the UK. It costs the global economy. Why do you believe that mood and emotion are the biggest and most ignored performance factors in business today?
The system has developed and into a patriarchy, hasn't it? It's well documented over the last number of decades. And, I grew up... I'm a 54-year-old male, absolutely being led to believe that feelings had little place in how I was pursuing my own career or schooling, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the starting point, is that we're battling against a system that has evolved to leave feelings at home because that's the best place for them. Problematic, of course, because as Jonathan's alluded to, mood and emotion sit absolutely at the centre of an organisation. They determine, the performance, the levels of engagement, the levels of creativity and innovation that we can achieve as a group of people or individually. But they also, as we now know, determine our levels of mental health. So if you imagine a continuum, mood and emotion really determine where you sit somewhere between deciding either to leave or burning out and high performance at the other end of the scale. So our plan here is to create a language, create a universal language in an organization, but really ramp up people's level of understanding of what moods and emotions are and what they mean. And if we can increase that level of literacy, then everything else happens. Or should start to happen in the way that we want it to.
And Jonathan, on that one, I've heard you refer to this as a performance opportunity, and especially as it relates to this report. What do you mean by that?
Absolutely is a performance opportunity, because when people think of mental health, they're actually using it as a euphemism for mental illness, depression and anxiety. But actually, when we are at our best and doing the performance and loving our work, we're having good mental health. So we're reframing mental health as the core foundation of high performance, and also how to sustain high performance at an individual level or as a leader is of critical importance. And just building on what Damien said, our research from Professor Chris Beattie is on metadata from the World Health Organization. 80% of mental ill health stems from dysregulated mood and emotion. And as I said earlier, mood and emotion are biological signals. They change our biology to focus us on the things that are causing us problems in our internal environment or in our external environment. If we don't deal with the mood and emotion, the biological stress remains in place, and over time that accumulates, and that is the root cause of 80% of mental ill health. And you cannot perform at your best when you're carrying around this significant amount, in some cases, of biological stress.
Can I just add to that? You quoted there the $1 trillion that McKinsey quote. I mean, this is one of the problems with organisational well-being, is that it's treated as a cost. It's looked at as a possible downside, a risk to the organisation, etc. We've got to view this completely differently. It's got to be seen as one of the biggest untapped opportunities that business has to face into in 2023. And for us, well-being and health needs to sit in leadership and management development. It needs to sit in how we get those tiers of our organisation to drive and lead growth. It cannot still be seen as a potential cost and risk to the organisation, because then it stays in HR and it just becomes an offering that people tap into when things go bad.
So, Damien, we deal as an organisation looking for businesses to make positive change around ESG and sustainability. That's what we're encouraging them to do. And part of that is encouraging their entire workforce to be able to make those changes that are more positive. How does that link into the work that you're doing of enabling people to feel comfortable and confident to make those changes?
Thanks, Alex. Great question. And the answer lies in something you said there. How do we enable our people to feel that way? And this is the point. You know, everything that you've articulated there, such as that feeling of trust, that feeling of buy-in, that feeling of engagement in the journey, all of these things are felt. So what we've got to do is look at our behaviours as organisations, the systems we deploy, the practices we deploy, the behaviours of our leadership and management, to go straight, to have the confidence to go straight to the heart of how our people feel and redesign our behaviours around ensuring that those are the outcomes that we elicit, that people are engaged, they are trusting of us, they are involved in the journey and included in it, and that they feel they've got an equitable stake in the future of the organisation. And that's actually a lot simpler to achieve than it sounds. It really does come down to shifting management and leadership behaviour to a place that they want to go to. Because every leader and manager that we work with wants to motivate people, wants to create that sense of inclusion and engagement. So really, we're pushing against open doors there. And I think if we can reshape how leaders lead in this modern day, which is something we absolutely need to do, we just achieve everything we want to achieve from a sustainability perspective, but also from a growth perspective.
And does that mean that we need to reframe how organisations see mental health? Or is it that they need to take it further up the ladder to C-suites and to board and to find value in it? Which bit is it that they need to do?
So when we think about reframing organisational mental health, first and foremost, mental health has become almost like a euphemism for tension and depression. We all have mental health all the time. And when you are performing at your best, you have good mental health. And when you're not feeling at your best, you have poor mental health. And we want to make mental health aspirational, just like physical health is. You know, we really put a lot of effort into our physical health, but we never really think about the effort we need to put into attain and maintain good mental health. One question we often ask at the kind of leadership level is, you know, it's not so much a question. We say, you know, poor mental health is not a pathological response to a great environment. It's a completely normal and predictable response to a pathological environment.
One of the really interesting things I was taught early on in a previous career, when I was chief executive of one of the biggest not-for-profits in the UK, so I had hundreds of staff, and I had a leadership coach, and they framed this very much in terms of, because I asked the leadership coach, what are the indicators you look for in a poor performing organisation? He said, the first one I ever look for, and is related to what you were saying, is somebody who uses the phrase, I knew that was going to happen. Because what he said is, when somebody says that, what they're actually saying was, I do not feel I have agency within the organization. I do not feel I have the ability, the right, the opportunity to tell people what I believe. My expertise is not being valued and is not being brought to the fore. And I think for us, and to Alex's question before, the only way we're ever going to achieve a pathway to net zero or a sustainable organisation or equity within an organisation or environmental practices that conform to what we need to today is when we give all people in the organisation a sense of agency, that they own this problem, that they can respond to this problem, and they can bring their expertise to that. With that in mind, what are some of the practical things you think that C-suite can do these days to go out, put mental health at the forefront, but put that sense of agency, that what you talk about there, that the pathological nature or environment to the fore, and actually start achieving this new framing of what constitutes leadership?
To start with, I would say that those senior leaders, that C-suite, have to role model this. You can't just treat this as ticking a box. This is, when it comes to your people, when it comes to sustainability, this is something you've got to actively lead and show interest in. And then you enable people to feel that this has got value and this is something that they will want to participate in, because innately they will want to. They want to be part of creating an environment that is sustainable, that supports them and their needs, how they feel throughout their career journey. One of our goals is simply to enable people to pursue their careers and to shape their careers as they started out hoping that their careers would shape out as, but while staying well. And that's a fundamental right, isn't it? A human need and a human right is to stay well whilst pursuing the life that you want to live. But this is all underpinned by a sense of psychological safety. So I'll just pass on to Jonathan for that, because I think psychological safety in many organisations that we work with is under or misunderstood at a very senior level in the organisation. It's kind of seen as something that, well, safety is breeds complacency, breeds mediocrity, perhaps. Absolutely not the case.
Yeah, we define psychological safety as having our five mammal needs being met, frequently met and rarely triggered. So again, we go back to them. We have certainty, that need to be anxiety-free, if you like, clear about what's coming in the future. Now, we can't all live our lives like that, but organisations can do a lot more to help people feel certainty, particularly think about how things are communicated. A sense of equity, equal and fair access to resources to be successful in your job. A sense of attachment, being valued for what you do. Your status is secure. And then we have a sense of autonomy, having that freedom to allocate the resources for you to be successful at work, so you're not micromanaged. So those are just four. And then we have our fifth one, which is that sense of inclusion, being included, you know, not being done to. So we think about that from a sustainability. How many times does a sustainability program get launched in a business and it's owned by someone and then it lands on someone's desk and they're not included? So people need to feel included. If those five needs are met in an organization, you are very likely to have psychological safety where you won't get that, I knew that would happen, because people feel safe and able to say, oh, by the way, this is a risk, and they don't feel the threat of their mammal needs being triggered by being open and honest. So this is not conflict-free, it's not stress-free psychological safety. They are characteristics of a safe environment because you feel able to present conflict, to present challenge. Those organisations that are sustainable because they see stuff coming before it hits them, and they also have the opportunity to be creative to create the future without that feeling of upsetting the leaders.
And I think this to me is critical for the listeners of City AM. You know, the city, the finance sector, is the very definition of a knowledge-based economy. And I've had it described to me exactly what you said there in a really interesting way that I'd value your perspective on, is that what the way leadership has changed or the way the leadership needs to change is a result of our economy shifting from a simple system to a complex system. And finance, again, is the very definition of a complex system. In a simple system, you can get someone to do routine, you know, a simple process, manufacturing when it was manual, for example. And so therefore, leadership is just instructive. This is what you do at this time, and this is what you create. Within complex systems, no individual person is able to understand every aspect of a complex system. So unless you encourage participation, expertise, diversity of thought into it, you end up with pretty much what created the 2008 financial crisis, which is a bunch of middle-aged white men reinforcing their own opinion around a table. And I think, you know, the way you talk about mental health and the way you put all of the things that those five needs that you just talked about there into perspective, I think is so valuable for the sector because it actually exemplifies what we need, which is an understanding of a complex system and the diversity and range of perspectives that are needed in order to understand it and improve it.
Nearly all work in the modern economy is knowledge based. And to be successful in that, individuals and teams have to negotiate a whole complexity of communication across a wide range of barriers, geographical barriers, demographic barriers, educational barriers, all of these things. And the quality of that communication determines the success of the outcome, that sharing of that knowledge across these complex barriers and these complex interdependencies. So let's think about diversity. On paper, intellectually, diversity makes complete sense. You think from a biological perspective, when a species loses diversity, it has a population crash. It gets to a tipping point where one disease wipes out the whole species because there is no diversity. Well, an organization needs diversity of thought to deal with all the challenges that it faces. So on paper, it makes sense. But if you have people who do not feel included or equitably treated, the potential synergistic benefits of diversity just simply cannot manifest because of how people feel. So, you know, feelings are not unprofessional things that need to be left at home. That was the kind of general view through the 70s and 80s. They're not pink and fluffy. They're hard biological processes that change our biology, and which in turn changes how we feel about things, those things being work. So, yeah, diversity without understanding the power of feelings will never work.
Sorry, Ken. Damon.
I was just going to add, we've seen this extraordinary challenge developing, don't we, post-COVID, where organisations are trying to get their people back into the office. And we know that the office environment in its wonderful, perfect form is an incredibly collaborative, positive experience. And there's so much benefit for bringing people into the offices and sharing that time together. It's also critically important for mental health that, you know, particularly in sectors like law, where we do quite a lot of work, where isolation is a huge risk, you know, bringing people back in, very, very important. But it's really interesting, isn't it, how loath people are to return to the office. You know, we've got to look at ourselves hard and say, is that because COVID has shown us another way that we can live this life that's hybrid or work from home, which suits us better? And quite possibly that's true. But we also need to look at ourselves in the mirror and say, is the environment we're asking people to return to not a good one? I think we'll find that the answer lies in both somewhere.
We've spoken previously about bringing your whole self to work and what that really means. And a lot of what you've been speaking about over the last few minutes is feels like you're trying to humanize leadership and bring in, you know, human emotions and moods, and they are to be acceptable. So have you got any guidance for companies that are out there of how do you do that? Where's the starting points? What do they start to think about? How do you even recognize whether it is or isn't a problem?
For me, and there's a lot of research, this particularly from Deloitte, around this, is that education piece is critical for leadership. So educating people in the role of feelings, of mood and emotion, why we have them, what they do, that will give them a knowledge and a language and a confidence to use it to have everyday normal conversations about the stuff that determines how well people perform. Measuring mood has been used in clinical psychology and psychiatry for over 50 years, and it's one of the most powerful predictors of performance and engagement. Yet, I don't think many leaders have the confidence or the language to have a meaningful conversation around mood or emotion.
I think that's all we've got time for, I'm afraid. I get the impression we could talk about this for a very long time. But thank you both for joining us, Damien, Jonathan. First, before we go, if anyone wants to know more about CHX Performance, how can they learn more? Where should they go?
Thanks, Mike. You can go to chxperformance.com, or you can link into Damien Stork or Jonathan Hook. And thanks so much for giving us this time with you. You know, we're on this journey with you. We're so proud to be so. And I think, as you can hear, we believe that the role of leadership management in this and achieving everything that we want to achieve is absolutely critical.
And thank you all for listening. This is the first in our series of Business of Sustainability podcast in partnership with Future Plus. And we will be looking at all of the aspects that we believe constitute sustainability in modern business, which is climate, environment, diversity and inclusion, economic and social impact. And this podcast is available on all major platforms. Thank you.